Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about our work on mostly transcriptomes to disrupt tick digestion, innate immunity, and reproduction. And I'll dispense with the thank yous first. Like some of the rest of you have said, I didn't do this all myself. There are many collaborators here, and I especially want to thank those collaborators at the NIH, especially Jennifer Anderson and Jesus Venezuela, my collaborators at Old Dominion, and also at NC State University, Dr. Rowe, who's here in the audience, and Kevin Donahue. Actually, Jose has already given a pretty good basis for why we want to do this work and the importance of genomes and transcriptomes as the potential for developing new strategies for controlling ticks and the ways in which we can do that through RNAi and tissue stage specificity, qPCR, and so on. And hopefully eventually reach a point where we can deploy some of the new knowledge to arrive at new strategies for tick control. So that's our objective. Following up on a terminology that Jose Ribeiro introduced earlier, I'm going to call the midgut transcriptome the myelome. And I introduce you to the importance of the midgut because this is the first point of contact for a lot of things. The blood that is introduced into the body of the animal first is handled here. It's where hemoglobin digestion takes place. It's the first point of contact for microbial pathogens. And so it's in our interest to try to identify what is being expressed, what's being upregulated in response to blood meal digestion, especially hemoglobin, and immune defense, and how the tick deals with detoxification and other aspects of the midgut function. And the first thing any pathogen is going to encounter, as well as the blood meal, is an incredible array of different molecules that are being expressed, as we can see here, and I've sort of superimposed many of them on this electron micrograph of the digestive tract. This is the lumen side. Here you see the hemolymph side. And we find there that there are many different molecules that are involved in digestion, such as lysosomes, others that are going to be important in controlling microbial infections, such as lectins. Various proteases are being expressed, as well as protease inhibitors, and so on. If we introduce microbes into the digestive tract of the tick, particularly Borrelia burgdorferi, E. coli, numerous gram-positive bacteria, we cannot reculture them, and one wonders why. And in the next few slides, I hope to illustrate some examples of why that might be. Anyway, to address this problem in collaboration with folks at the NIH, we undertook a library construction effort of the midgut from ticks that were feeding for very brief periods of time, essentially 2 days, and others that were in the process of lengthy feeding for 6 days. These were virgin females, but in the process of feeding. Isolated the mRNA and undertook the library construction kit. And I won't go through all the details of it other than to very briefly mention how, we ended up picking colonies and then putting, running them through 96 well plates, getting the PCR inserts, and eventually sequencing them and high throughput sequence, which in those days was considered high throughput. Now in view of some of the newer technologies, this is no longer an appropriate term, but nevertheless, a huge amount of information is produced. And with the assistance of Dr. Ribeiro, this was assembled into contigs and then examined. We can look at the sequence here. And also, the number of sequences in the different stages, those that were feeding only 2 days versus those that were feeding for much lengthier periods. And there are big differences. Quite a few molecules are expressed only in the late feeding stages, others only in the early feeding stages, and number of sequences differ. We can also look at different aspects of signal P and blast results. and try to assemble information about that, do database searches, not only against the standard NR database, but also the ACARI database that had been put together based on all of the different ticks and mites and so on, conserved domains, gene ontology databases, and a myriad of other bioinformatic tools that are available to us. And moving through this rather quickly, our goal was the assignment of putative function. We have so many of these sequences, what do they do? What are they involved in? And this decision was based on the quality of the sequences that make up a contig, the consensus of numerous databases, e-values, of course, are very important. And we also did tryptic digestion mass spectrometry. I ran a lot of these samples on gels, cut out the bands, and sent them off for tryptic digestion and mass spec analysis from these protein gels at a nearby university. And if we look at the assembled information, one of the first things that strikes you if you look at this pie chart is most of them are unknown. And this is happening over and over again as people look at transcriptomes and proteomes of ticks, to a large extent because this is an understudied group. Another large category are, of course, housekeeping genes. And then all the rest here in this small segment are all of these others, proteases, protease inhibitors, carbohydrate ingestions, and so on, as you can read here. So the interesting area constitutes perhaps only 10% of the whole panoply of different genes that appear in our transcriptome. Nevertheless, this provides useful new information. For example, we notice that there are quite a bit of differences in the number of these sequences that are being expressed at different stages, and we want to not only consider what is being expressed, but when are they being expressed, and we'll look at that later on in our studies. And I want to take a few examples of these and see how we can extract information and then go ahead and resequence some of these, perhaps get full-length sequences, and then study them in detail. And one of the first that is of great interest are the protease inhibitors. Many microbes use proteases as virulence factors. And so protease inhibitors play a role in controlling that, as well as, of course, in regulating protease function. And here in our library, we found 9 different contigs. Some were serpins, others cystatins. And one of my former graduate students, now at the University of Maryland Medical School, Shane Sorrell, took one of these. It was a CUNET serine protease inhibitor, and undertook additional studies. And as you can see here, it was found predominantly in the midgut, and then underwent extensive expression changes in response to the presence or absence of rickettsia. And he used a non-pathogenic rickettsia, Rickettsia montanensis, to challenge the midguts and see what happens in regard to this CUNET serine protease inhibitor. And initially it was expressed, but then declined in the controls, but you can see how it's being upregulated in response to the rickettsial challenge in the challenge ticks. And then he transfected cells with it to see if it would control for infection. And here, as you can see in the controls, it did not, but in these challenge cells that were transfected with this serine protease inhibitor, there was a tremendous reduction in the ability of the rickettsia to invade and colonize those cells and develop. So this is one of the outcomes of our library, and we're looking at others in the same way. So briefly, in summary, the transcriptome analysis provides us an opportunity to examine global expression of transcripts in the midgut and compare the gut responses to host attachment versus blood feeding. We see a number of proteins that are important here, but I especially want to call attention to several points. The presence of many proteins with similar functions is consistent with the hypothesis that gene duplication contributed to successful adaptation of the ticks to hematophagy. We find a number of duplications of serine proteases, serine protease inhibitors, of cysteine proteases. I think we came up with about 28 different cysteine proteases of all different types. Now, another category I'd like to look at is the synganglion. This is of great interest because this, in effect, is the combined brain and central nervous system of the ticks. And most of this work was done at NC State University by Dr. Rowe and his graduate student, soon to be a postdoc at the University of Pennsylvania State University, Kevin Donahue. We want to look at the transcript expressed in the female synganglion. But to appreciate what's happening, it would be useful to look at a model of what's going on and how the brain plays a role in regulating all of these different activities. And I don't have time to elaborate on all the different points in the model, but we certainly are aware of how the brain is signaling the epidermis to make 20-hydroxyectisone, which plays an important role as it accelerates in abundance to stimulate the fat body to make vitellogenin, the oocytes in the ovary to begin expressing vitellogenin receptors, a molecule we recently isolated and described in full detail and published last year, and many other aspects of that, as well as what the male is contributing. And we're going to take a quick look at the transcriptome from the male reproductive system. So the question is, how are we going to study all of this? And the transcriptomes provide some convenient ways in which we can look at the global expression of the many different molecules that give us some insights to things to look for and what we can pick out and then study in further detail. So briefly, we now had the opportunity to do a much more extensive transcriptome than the earlier techniques of cloning in E. coli and picking colonies using the Roche 454 sequencer technology. And here what we did is extract purified mRNA, did RT-PCR, and prepare the material for the sequencer. The PCR reaction was done to optimize the number of cycles. And very briefly, running through this, a whole series of procedures were done to get the DNA onto tiny beads and dropped into little tiny wells. The plate that this goes onto contains 40 microliter wells, and it's covered with a vast number of them. And so what you're dealing with is the opportunity to have a huge array, perhaps I shouldn't use that word, but a huge number of these sites where all these PCR reactions are taking place. And then these, as we call the picotiter plate, has 1.7 million wells. And this then results, as it's read, assembling singletons into contiguous sequences. Bases are flowed over the plate, and the base incorporation produces light that has a laser there. And the sequence is recorded and determined, eventually is assembled. Over 500,000 different reads were obtained from one run on that plate. I understand it took many, many hours, like almost a whole day. And these were then assembled in over 20,000 contigs and then submitted to BLAST and looked at how many of them could be annotated and how many were novel. And one of the first things that came out of this was the discovery of a number of neuropeptides, putative hormones, that we believe play an important role in regulation of body function. And we just listed a few here. And the first question that comes up is, okay, so you have some matches. How do you know that this is real? How do you know that that's really what they do? Well, I want to give you a few examples of the answer to that question that Kevin did. He picked one, allostatin. This was reported years ago by Zhu and Oliver. And it's believed to inhibit JH biosynthesis in insects, which doesn't do us very much good in ticks, which, as far as we know, do not have JH, but also as a myomodulator and as an inhibitor of vitellogenin production by the fat body. And I call your attention to this last point, because when he looked at that by qPCR, by real-time PCR, the expression of this from the unfed females during the feeding females to the final replete females, egg-laying females, changed and went down. So if this is playing a role in vitellogenin regulation, in other words, inhibiting it, would be wise to release that, suppress that, and see it go away. Perhaps that's one of the things it's doing. Another one was the insulin-like peptide. ILP signaling has been shown to regulate development, longevity, metabolism, and reproduction in insects. And we found, he got matches showing it was good alignments, similar to many, many different ticks and some insects. And here we see a similar phenomenon where ILP expression was elevated initially in the unfeds and then declined. And we don't understand why. There seems to be some control here, but whether this is playing a role in egg maturation or just what it is doing biologically is ready for additional study. Another strange or surprising molecule was bursicon. I remind you, we're dealing with adult ticks that do not molt. And bursicon is going to be important in playing a role in the tanning of the cuticle, and yet these ticks already have fully tanned cuticles, so why are we looking at bursicon, if indeed that is its function? And it's curious that this one was bursicon alpha did not change, but bursicon B, the beta, strongly was upregulated in the mated vitellogenic and egg-laying female. And one thing that I would call to your attention is that during the egg-laying process, the female tick, which does not have an ovipositor, the region around the genital pore undergoes extensive modification. It softens a great deal. And this may be an important aspect of why this molecule is present. I'm purely speculating here at this point. So this is a question that needs to be looked into and studied further. And finally, we're looking at the present time, we've just gotten started on it, the role of the male accessory gland in testis vas sephrens by the same method, 454 pyrosequencing, so I won't bother going through the methods again. And we extracted mRNA from fed males that were ready to mate with females by literally letting them come close to the female, climb on top of the female, and before they could copulate, we removed them, poor things, and put them in triazole before they had a chance to get too frustrated, and extracted their RNA, and some of the results that you see are here. And one of the molecules we found was reported by Ruben Kaufman in Alberta as a male engorgement factor, and indeed we found it, although we found a much longer sequence for it than what he reported. And we're not quite sure whether this really does play a role in engorgement, but we've been looking at this by RNAi, trying to knock it down and see if it does inhibit the ability of the females to engorge or trigger the females' engorgement. And so far the answer is ambiguous. Other molecules that we looked at were stimulated by the study of what they call ACPs, accessory gland proteins in insects, such as Drosophila, and we asked the question, can we find any of those in ticks as well? And one that has really caught our attention is a metalloprotease. Look at the E-match there, E-value, -154. And we also find this in the Ixodes genome. If we take this sequence and submit that to the Ixodes capillaris in VectorBase, we find the very similar gene in there. And these have been reported to play an important role in turning on reproduction in insects. Proteases especially have been found to be quite important. And another group are the protease inhibitors. And they also have been found to be very important in regulating reproduction in insects. And we're finding a number of those, including a Kunitz-like protease inhibitor, as has been described earlier. We also find a subolacin. Perhaps we shouldn't be surprised about that. I'm not sure what that's doing there, but perhaps it's ubiquitous throughout all the tissues of males as well as female ticks. And one that is similar to a ACP that we found in Drosophila is also showing up here and also showing up in the Ixodes capillaris genome. So these give us some targets to look at for further study. And so summarizing, we found at least 14 neurohormones in the female synganglion, and qPCR shows differential regulation in related to feeding and mating. Some of these are downregulated, others are upregulated, and we'd like to study them further to see exactly what role they're playing. We're also finding quite a few sex-related peptides similar to those found in insects, and ultimately this approach may enable us to come up to the discovery of specific male sex peptides, that's really what we're looking at from the male, that is responsible for stimulating female engorgement, turning on the whole cascade of vitellogenin production, vitellogenin uptake, and ovoposition. And we hope that future studies will enable us to arrive at our goal of gene disruption. Perhaps transgenic ticks are on the drawing board someday. And of course, vaccination with some of the things that would be of interest leading to this final picture. And with that, I'll stop and see if you have any questions. If I understand your question,
are they in
Genba? The transcriptome for the synganglion, the female synganglion, has just been submitted to GeneBank, yes. The one for the male reproductive system has not yet. We hope to do that soon. The answer is someday. Yes, good question. Whether I'll do it or the next generation after me will do it, I'm not sure. Anything else? Yes. Yes, we had a gonadotropin-stimulating receptor, I can't remember the full sequence of the nomenclature, but yes, that one, both the protein and the receptor. No, I thought about that, no. Maybe it's there, I just didn't ask the right questions. Yeah, I've been very stimulated by many of the papers that were given today, and certainly want to go back. We're in early times, and you know, pulling out these neurohormones from 20,000 contigs doesn't mean we're just going to ignore all the rest of it. It was just one target that, you know, really. Oh, absolutely. See, one of the problems we have with this, in contrast to the earlier techniques of library construction, the sequences tend to be short. And in many cases, even when they're assembled into contigs, you've got, 300 base pair, 400 base pair, short sequences. Now, the one that gave us such a great match, for example, that metalloprotease was 1,868 base pairs long. And you got most of the gene right there without having to do any further amplification. So good luck. But when you're dealing with these short sequences, it's a bit more difficult. I think Roche is improving the technology where that's going to be the next generation equipment. And by the way, the cost of this is considerable. One run on the sequencer is easily over $10,000.